This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The July 15th Turkey coup was launched by a military faction to topple President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, a leader seen by many as an autocratic threat to Turkish secularism. The foiled coup saw thousands arrested, hundreds killed, and the country left in shock. Nur Fahanim, a Malaysian student who was transiting at Istanbul's Atatürk Airport, recalls the night of the coup.
When I arrived at the airport, I checked the departure screen. I was shocked to see all the flights are delayed. Somebody from Moscow texted me and asked if I'm okay. She sent me a picture of a breaking news about the military coup and that gunfires heard in the capital of Istanbul and Ankara. I was informed that there are government soldiers with a rifle trying to enter to protect the airport. Suddenly, all these paranoid people in the airport started screaming. They were running, and everyone in the airport were running as well. Me and my friend, we just ran to end up in the airport mosque. There are so many people in there, and they were crying, praying, calming themselves down. We all heard the sonic bomb, I think. A loud explosion sound, and I can really feel the vibrations shaking at the airport.
The military has long considered itself the guardian of constitutionally secular Turkey. It has overthrown the government three times in three decades. Unlike past coups, this one was detected early and successfully defeated. Dr. James Dorsey, senior fellow at the Rajaratnam School of International Studies, explains why the coup failed.
Two main reasons that the coup failed was that the coup planners miscalculated the degree of support they may find within the military itself, and they miscalculated the public response to it. There was probably more than one group involved in the failed coup. There is little doubt that officers who were followers of the self-exiled controversial preacher Fethullah Gulen were involved, not necessarily were acting on his instructions, but had their own personal interests. A lot of these officers feared that at a National Security Council meeting that is going to take place in the next few weeks, they were probably going to be moved out of the military. And that is what prompted them to act prior to that council. The other party probably involved was described as a deep state in Turkey, which is a coalition of parts of the military, parts of the intelligence, the far extreme ultra-nationalist right and criminal elements.
Following the coup, Erdogan has detained or dismissed over 60,000 civil servants. He claims they are followers of Fethullah Gulen, his former political ally and an influential cleric, and the person he holds responsible for the coup. Erdogan has issued a formal request to the US demanding Gulen's extradition. Andrew Korybko, political analyst at the Oriental Review, explains.
His influence and the Gulenist network were absolutely pivotal to having the coup happen. And I think it's also very ironic. Most people wouldn't think that a secular military, which is what the Turkish armed forces are constitutionally supposed to be, at least, and historically have been, would side with or go under the influence of an Islamic cleric. But at the same time, politics makes for very strange bedfellows. And I think that that is what explains it. Gulen used the cover of a secular military to try to launch his coup. And he was using that very masterfully because of the history of military coups that Turkey has, all of which have succeeded up until now, and also because he wanted to ride the wave of secular discontent against Erdogan, who is trying to implement political Islam in the country. Even before this coup happened, Turkey was trying to get that guy extradited back to Turkey. The fact that he is not extradited still is understandably going to be seen as a hostile act by the Turkish government.
Gulen has denied involvement in the coup. He asserts it was staged by Erdogan to further demonize him and his followers. On the other hand, critics insist Gulen has had a long-term project to control Turkey. Dorsey suggests the coup aftermath reflects an ongoing power struggle between the two former allies.
Gulen had a long-term strategy. I have no doubt about it. He told it to me personally. In many ways, that was a strategy that was at least tacitly agreed upon by Erdogan for many years. Gulen was a supporter of Erdogan when he first came to power as prime minister. It was together with Gulen that Erdogan took a very important step in terms of Turkish democracy, as well as in Turkish membership in the European Union, and that was to bring the military under civilian control. Now, Gulen is a 75-year-old frail man who has been lived for the last 18, 19 years in the United States. You've got to understand the movement is not a hierarchical, organized organization. It's much more of a network in which Gulen is a sort of spiritual leader or a leader that is very respected. I suspect Gulen is surrounded by people who are power hungry. Gulen is no longer in control of his movement. What I believe happened last week is you had followers of Gulen involved in the failed coup, but they not necessarily were directed by Gulen. Gulen may not have been operationally involved in the planning of the coup. This is not what the Turkish government claims, but the Turkish government will have to provide evidence that Gulen was not only aware of the plans, but also was involved in it if they want to persuade the United States to extradite him to Turkey.
Besides demanding Gulen's extradition and purging thousands, Erdogan has also mentioned the possibility of reinstating the death penalty. This has prompted the concern of world leaders who worry Erdogan is becoming increasingly authoritarian.
The death penalty will close down Turkey's opportunity to join the European Union. A death penalty on the statutes of a country is a no-go for the European Union, and the EU has made that very clear. Obviously, the death penalty is not an issue for the United States, which itself has the death penalty. With regard to Gulen's extradition, I think there are two things. Gulen is much more convenient for Erdogan in Pennsylvania than he would be in a Turkish courtroom. The reason for that is once Gulen would be in a Turkish courtroom, he has a platform to counter much of what Erdogan says. And the way the U.S. process works, ultimately the decision whether he will be extradited or not is a decision of the State Department. The State Department not only takes into consideration legal arguments put forward, but it also looks at humanitarian issues. You've had pictures in the last week of senior officers who were arrested and obviously had suffered some sort of abuse while in custody. You just had a Amnesty International report, which was very damning on the way that Turkey has been treating those that have been arrested. Even though many people doubt that Turkey can actually produce the evidence, but let's assume that it can, it could very well be that you get a federal court decision, the State Department still decides that it would not extradite Gulen. The bottom line of all of this is Gulen is probably going to become, if Turkey makes it as important a point as it has in the last week, a sore point in U.S.-Turkish relations.
The Erdogan government has since declared a nationwide state of emergency, which gives Erdogan radically enhanced powers for 3 months. He and the cabinet can now enact laws bypassing parliament, have broader powers of arrest, and go unchallenged by the Constitutional Court. So the question is, are we witnessing the start of a new era in Erdogan politics? Dorsey analyzes what this means for Turkey's future.
If you look at Erdogan's career, particularly the period when he became prime minister until today, he has gone a long way already in trying to curb Turkish democracy. What the failed coup has done is accelerated it. He has increasingly moved to suppress his critics. This year alone, almost 900 journalists were fired from their jobs. I think what you're going to see is a de facto executive presidency in which power is concentrated in Erdogan's hands. Continued conflict with the Kurds. You've already seen the revival of military clashes. Prior to the coup, the immunity of deputies was stripped, and therefore he can act against opposition members of the parliament. You're going to see further muzzling of the press, further muzzling of academic freedom. The Gulen network operates a vast number of often very good schools across the globe. Erdogan, the last week, has shut down 1,000 schools in Turkey alone. Gulen had 28 schools here in Pakistan, where I am at the moment, which has a very troubled education system in which militant Islamists often figure prominently. Turkey has asked Pakistan to close down those schools, and that would really be a setback in a country that is struggling to reorganize its education system. President Erdogan increasingly has demonstrated that his tendencies are illiberal and authoritarian prior to the coup. Fact of the matter is that the public across the board, whether or not they were in favor of Erdogan's policies, came out on the streets and have since backed the government on the grounds that a bad democracy is better than a military rule.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.